You're listening to Band Geek with Richie Castellano on the Riotcast Network. Riotcast.com.
What's up, guys? Richie here. This is Band Geek episode 22 with Joe Cumia and Vince Tatinelli. Joe and Vince play in the bands 2U and Almost Journey. Now, those are nationally touring tribute bands. They're really successful. They do a ton of gigs. But you might know Joe better from his work as the musical director for Opie and Anthony and the new Anthony Cumia Show. Vince you might know from the band 9 Days, who had a huge hit with the song Story of a Girl, and they still play to this day. So these guys are the real deal. They're talented guys, and they're freaking hilarious. I had a great time doing this show. They stayed here forever, and it felt like, you know, it felt like it was an hour, but when we looked at the clock, they were here for like 3 hours. So obviously we're going to do this one as a two-parter. They're great musicians, and they're really funny. I was cracking up just now as I was mixing the show, so I can't wait for you to hear it. Let's take care of some business really quick. If you want to support the show, now remember, this is a free show, and to help us keep going, there are two things you can do. On our page, which is riotcast.com/bandgeek, if you go to the top of the page, there's an Amazon link. You go there, you do your normal shopping, and a small percentage of what you buy goes to support the show, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. The other thing you can do is rate and comment on iTunes. That helps us tremendously. So thank you very much for doing that. Here are a few Blue Oyster Cult shows coming up that I'm playing. On October 29th in Fort Wayne, Indiana, we're at the C2G Music Hall. And then on the 31st, we're in Mescalero, New Mexico at the Inn of the Mountain Gods Casino. Then next month, November 15th, we'll be in, we're in Wales. We're in fucking Wales, okay? At Hard Rock Hell. So if you know, if you're in Wales and you know where Hard Rock Hell is, come down and say hi. All right, I'm gonna shut up now. Enjoy the show.
Then I'll move.
Yeah, we're very professional here. Okay, here we go. You good, Andy?
Yeah, I'll just be doing this for the...
You put him in front of a piano again during the podcast.
You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Do you know I have no falsetto?
Really?
I've blown my voice out so many times that...
My dad has the same problem.
It comes out like air.
Did you play sports when you were a kid?
No, I ran though. I was a runner.
My dad said from yelling when he was like playing sports when he was a kid, that screwed up his falsetto.
Playing sports or singing.
Yeah.
Playing sports or singing incorrectly. That's
you
that'll
do more
definitely
damage
do
your voice when you're talking though.
Really?
Yep.
You do?
Yep.
Actually, yeah, my brother's now doing like a lot of karaoke just to strengthen his voice.
Yeah.
Speaking voice. Because he every once in a while he'll be like, his voice is gone. It just goes away. And for him, it's like, that's his living.
Yeah. You
know? So, I mean, but it totally disappears. But my falsetto, I haven't seen my falsetto in years. It's been years. So now when I, every once in a while, I'll show up only on ooze, like, ooh.
There you go. That's, Anne-Marie's the person to talk to because she's a vocal teacher.
A vocal coach. Yeah. I really do need one of those. I don't know, but I don't know, no matter how good a teacher you are, if my falsetto...
No, if it's gone, it's gone.
It's gone.
But that's something a doctor has to tell you.
That's a terrible teacher thing to say.
No, it's not.
No, it's true. She's honest. She's being honest.
Listen, I had nodes. I almost had them, and I had to really, like, reevaluate what I was doing, you know? And most of it was just from not sleeping and drinking way too much coffee. And... Not from singing, from speaking. it's from not sleeping.
And it's frustrating as hell because, I mean, I used to be able to, my sense of pitch is pretty good. So I used to be able to like find a note and hit it. Didn't matter how high it was. Not that it would come out great. I mean, it was falsetto. It was just, but it was there. Ahs, oohs, ees, whatever. Now it's like only ooh. Anything other than ooh is gone. I have nothing.
You know, those oohs sounded great, guys, but when those ahs sounded like shit. I guess we're started. Welcome to Band Geek.
Is it rolling?
Yeah. That's a good way to start a show.
Has it been rolling?
Welcome to Band Geek. I'm Richie Castellano. My co-host is Jarrett Pressman.
Hello.
On keyboards today, we have Andy Escalise.
Hello.
Escalise.
Anne-Marie Castellano on vocals, or I don't know if you're singing that much today.
I'm sitting.
But we'll figure out something for you to do. We have Brandy Metaxas back there. Hi, Brandy.
On nothing.
You'll do something. And we have, we're getting double teamed today. We have two guests.
I love that. Yeah.
Two guests of our stature,
yes,
equal only one of your usual guests. So,
I don't think so. On drums today, we have, now let's see if I butcher your name, Vin Tatinelli.
Hey.
Now, is it Vin or Vince?
Vince.
Vince? See, I fucked it up already. It's Vince Tatinelli. Welcome. Vince,
I respond to either.
Vince plays in the band 2U, which is a high-end U2 tribute band, and Almost Journey, which is a high-end Journey tribute band. And he was also a member of 9 Days.
Still am,
right.
He was actually, they just played over at the, in Huntington. Paramount. The Paramount.
We played there.
That's awesome.
Great room.
Cool. And our second guest is Mr. Joe Cumia.
Hi there.
Who is also from 2U and from Almost Journey.
Woo! Thank you. Started those bands about 15 years ago now.
Really?
It's been 15 years that we've been doing that, yeah.
So when you started them, was there a demand like right away to do like U2? Now, did you start both bands at the same time?
I belong to a you might even have heard of this guy, Hugo Valenti.
Okay.
Hugo is a Steve Perry clone. He looks, smells, he definitely oozes Steve Perry. And I started a Journey tribute with him years and years ago. And then I kind of made my own way, started doing the U2 thing. There was an immediate demand for U2 shows because there was only one other, The Unforgettable Fire.
Okay.
And those guys were, they were spreading themselves thin. So, I kind of figured it was a good market to jump into. And I was right. 15 years later.
Now, this might sound like a stupid question, but were you a fan of U2?
Not a huge fan. No, I always liked the Edge's playing because he was kind of off the beaten track. He's a very weird, very difficult guy to emulate. I mean, the delay times are just strange. You really have to listen deep to get it happening and get it right. So it was a bit of a challenge to get it going.
When you do a 2U gig now, since you started it, you're doing huge gigs. You're playing Vegas, you're playing Disney, you're doing all these are big gigs, and these are big corporate gigs. When you started, how did you go about getting the sounds? I mean,
I still use, believe it or not, the same stupid all-in-one pedal. I see these guys. I used to go out and see these, other U2 shows. The Unforgettable Fire being one of them, and the guitar player, Joe, coincidence, he had the Edge's gear. I mean, he used to run around with an AC-30, an old hot-rodded AC-30, eight guitars.
Whoa.
Eight different guitars. And you're talking about playing clubs like this, and a refrigerator-sized rack behind him with all the analog gear that Edge uses. But the Edge has something that he doesn't have. He's got Dallas Shoe. Dallas Shoe is the Edge's guitar tech that takes care of all that stuff.
Right.
So me being the young upstart, U2 tribute band, I decided to get myself a nice little RP500. Little Digitech unit and spend a lot of time with it. I still, to this day, I'm still tweaking. You can ask him. Like, between songs, he'll see me down there, like, messing around. But the sounds that I'm getting are...
Sounds like an ad for Digitech.
Right? It does. By the way, if Digitech wants to sponsor me, I'm wide open. I have no sponsorship. But I've used that pedal for, you know, since day one. So it's, but it's always a work in progress. You're always working on it.
And then you're not tired once you're done setting up.
No, or for breakdown. Breakdown's very easy. Two cables, a little pedal on the floor, and you're done.
Why not the RP1000?
Because when I bought the 500,
he'd have to reprogram it.
Did not exist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, all that's right. A later. Yeah, that's a later model. I'm, you know,
you have to reprogram the whole thing.
Actually, no, because that stuff is all storable. You go MIDI in and out, and just you upload a USB out, upload it to your computer. I have four of those pedals. A couple of them have taken drinks when they weren't supposed to.
How many do you bring on a gig? Do you bring like a backup?
I bring one. They're pretty solid.
All right.
That's the Richie Castellano method over here.
Yeah, I went about it like I was the other guy from the other YouTube band. I would bring, you know, five guitars and a half stack and all that stuff. And then we were playing, you know, the Red Line in Manhattan?
Yeah, sure.
We were playing there a lot, and I would just, you know, Andy would have to double park the car while I took like 10 trips. Okay, let me get my my head. Let me get my effects rack. I'm playing the Red Lion.
It's funny that you say the Red Lion, because we played like every other Thursday night at the Red Lion. What band was it?
This was, do you know Vin Cimino? It was a band with me, Vin Cimino, and Danny called Baby Johnson. Baby Johnson is basically Vin with three other guys. That's the band. So it's whoever is available. It's like, it's a hoax. He has this band. Oh, you want Baby Johnson? It's him. He shows up. And you know what? There might have even been gigs without him. You know, but it's him and whoever is around. But it's cool because he gets guys from major touring bands. You know, hey, you're, and he'll tell you about a gig like 2 weeks before. Hey, you around? You want to play the Red Lion? And whoever is the singer is the leader of the band for that gig, and you do that person's gig, that person's repertoire.
Yeah.
So, and who are you playing Red Lion with?
We did that with 2U for a long time.
Wow.
Thursday nights, they would have us in like, once every 3 weeks or so. And we would do like the headlining slot later on. We would have an opening band go on from like 8 to 10, and then we would come on, and we did that for a long time.
That used to be a fun gig.
And then something happened. I don't know what happened. I guess the college there, what was it, FIT?
I don't know.
Yeah. NYU was right up the road. Yeah. I mean, that was, they stopped coming out. It was the strangest thing. I think what they started doing was bringing in bands that weren't really cutting it. They weren't doing.
Well, what happened is, from my knowledge, I could be totally wrong, is they got new management, and the new management didn't want to pay what they used to be paying. And so a lot of the bands said, I'm not leaving my house for that much money. And myself included, I said, I can't go out there.
Ah, yes, her name was Anne.
Yeah.
You'll remember Anne.
We love Anne. I miss you, Anne.
Yeah. I did. I really did. I used to do a big hug and kiss every time I saw her. But
no, she's gone.
Aww. She's, yeah.
Shout out to Anne.
We miss you, Anne.
Yes, shout out to
Anne. She loved us, and we had a good time. But I remember bringing all this gear, and I was like, why am I doing this?
Exactly.
I said, no, these drunk people don't care if I'm using EL34 tubes or 6L6. They don't know what I'm – they don't care if I have the delay times right. They don't give a shit.
And the only times you
– Is there an amp there that I can plug into?
No, they have a bass amp there and a broken drum set.
Yes, the broken drum set.
I'll use the broken drum set.
Use the broken drum set.
Have sticks and gaff tape.
That's all you need.
Every once in a while, we would bring in like the errant tom, just, you know, just to like complete the kit.
Oh, you want a floor tom? What do you want, everything? But one day I went there and I just got sick of it. And it was the 1-4 spot, which I hated doing.
That's
so,
a tough one.
So Danny and Vin said, hey, we got 1-4. It doesn't pay that much. You want to do it? I said, I'll do it, but I'm not bringing my whole rig. I just got this pod. I'm just going to bring that, no amp. And they're like, yeah, man, whatever. So I show up and there's a guy, Dylan, who was doing sound there. And I said, Dylan, I don't have an amp today, but I have a pod. So can you please, you know, give me a monitor so I can hear what I'm playing? He goes, yeah, sure. And I put it up and he came up to me. He's like, this is the best you've ever sounded. I said, are you shitting me? He goes, I can put you through the PA. It's controlled. I can mix now. Because, you know, when we have a raging stack behind us, we turn into assholes. We make it too loud. We want to feel it. You know, moving the hair on the back of our legs. And it's not, and
for
us,
four people.
Oh, you know, when you're 55, that hair is gone. It's gone. You've been playing so long. You, at least you had Dylan. We had this guy who was Russian.
Slavic.
Russian.
That's
Boris. Boris was the, we used to call him Boris. Sounds good. Sounds good tonight. Sounds good tonight. We haven't played a note yet, Boris. What are you talking about, man?
Maybe because you called him Boris.
Yeah, we used to call him Boris. And he was a good dude. He was all
why
right.
Why always called him? You think we called Boris?
And, very, very little to say to anybody. Just it sounds good to know.
Boris.
No worries, sounds good.
Wasn't he like I have his business card somewhere. Wasn't he like a jazz saxophonist?
I think so. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Probably why he hated us all.
That's why he hated.
Is this Dylan or Boris?
No. I'm calling him Boris now. Look what you did.
I never knew his name.
What it's Slavic. That's his name. Yeah.
Slavic, right?
Slavic, shout out. But
and Boris.
I thought he was just saying he was Slavic. I had no idea that was his name. He's like me, Slavic. I'm like, really? He must be from Yugo or Czechoslovakia. Somewhere over there. Slovenia.
That's where the Slovenians Slavic. Come from.
Let me introduce you to my sister. She dances up the road. No. Stop. I don't want to. No, I really don't. No, sounds really good.
I like how everybody you're describing has that, like, nondescript Dracula.
I am from Romania.
What is this? Blah, blah, blah. Wow. Everybody with blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my God.
That's a movie my daughter likes. Blah, blah, blah.
What, the Count Chocolate commercial?
Yeah, like Count Chocolate. I was a Frankenberry kind of guy.
Okay, yeah.
I love that, though, that, like, way back when in the 40s and 50s when there was the black and white Dracula movies, that was scary. Just blah. Blah.
Oh, no, sounds foreign.
I don't like this.
Eddie, come over and help me now, Eddie. I just saw that last night. Just watch that. Oh, what? Bella, that was perfect. That's perfect. Rich, cut. Perfect. Print it.
That's a great movie.
So...
You lost your train of thought.
Oh, no, I know what we're talking about. Pods and processors.
Yes.
Bringing no gear.
Yeah. So I ever since that gig, I started bringing these on the road to BOC gigs. Because now, a Blue Oyster Cult was using, you know, Marshall stacks and boogies and SVTs, and which are great. But when you're using rental backline, you don't know what you're going to get. So,
they vary. Yeah. They vary from piece to piece. Sure.
So I'm using this now, and I'm sure you've experienced this when someone says, "Oh man, what are you using?" Especially another musician. Oh, you know, I'm using this Digitech. I'm using this pod. They go, "What?" Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, because there's this preconception about, you know, gear that you have to have giant tube amps. You have to have all this stuff. You have to have a pedal board. And you know what? Like, yes, that's a completely valid way to get a good sound. But there's other ways, too. There's a lot of gear on the market. And I remember having a discussion with guys from an amp manufacturer. I'm not going to name which amp manufacturer, but they said, our $400 line is voiced the same as our $3,000 line.
Right.
And I said, aren't you worried about competing with yourself? He said, for whatever reason, $400 customers will never overlap with $4,000 customers.
That's very true. Very true.
And it's all, and when you tell people, like, you know, I have a pod, and they say, oh, you should get an Axe FX. I said, yeah, but this sounds good. No, it doesn't. I said, well, you got to listen to it. You know, if a guy like you is sitting there for 15 years tweaking this thing out to get the edge sound, it's going to sound good.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's all about how much you're willing to put into getting those sounds.
That's all. Yeah, it's always about the time, the amount of time you put into it.
Yeah. Just like a guy who uses pedal board will, you know, go online and find, oh, I found the most rare, you know, overdrive pedal. It's, for us, it's the same thing, but for us, it's, I got to tweak this setting to get this tone that's in my head. Mm-hmm. When I saw a picture of your band, I noticed you had more than one guitar, though, when you play gigs.
Yeah, I know. Well, normally I'll take out the Explorer, because that's right. Like his signature axe. And then you need something with single coils, so I take a Strat out with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the I use an SSH, so it's I have a humbucker in the rear position in case I snap a string on the Explorer. See, I'm always thinking, but I can get the single coil sound out of the Fender, and I used to take out a dedicated single coil Strat, that an older one that had a particular tone, like the sound at the beginning of Where the Streets Have No Name.
Yep.
That real chinga chinga kind of,
in between positions sort of sound.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
What about, do you bring anything out to do with the acoustic stuff?
We really haven't touched that in a long time. I used to use this thing.
Oh, the Variax.
Yeah, I used to use the Variax exclusively, mainly because I could drop key, and depending on which singer we had that night. I've been through 12 Bonos, 8 Larrys, 7 Adams, and I've replaced myself 3 times to no avail.
I count for 5 of them, though.
Yeah, he does. He counts for about 5 of my drummers.
Yeah, on the website, because I was doing a little research, you are... What's your name on the website?
It's T.D. Rummer.
T.D. Rummer.
T.D. Rummer.
That's Joe's way of saying the drummer, because you never know who's going to be there.
Oh, man. That's like Baby Johnson. I guess it's a Long Island thing. You got to get who's right.
Although Vin's been the most. Out of all the drummers that I've had, he's been around the most.
Are you, Vince, now you said you're still playing with 9 Days. How often do you play with them?
We just did a 3-day run with Dishwalla and Stroke 9.
Oh, wow.
Jersey, we did a Wellmont Theater.
So do you do a lot of package deals with other, bands in that era?
This was kind of a one-off with these guys. We did
this weekend, and we did one other weekend with Stroke out in Philly.
And our plan, we just started working with some management, and we're planning on going into doing another record within the next 3 to 4 months.
Oh, nice.
So
I met John at a benefit gig that we did, Dee Snider's autism gig.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, really nice guy. I got to get him on the show, too, eventually.
Definitely.
I'm trying to get every musician on Long Island. I don't even live in Long Island.
Like I said, I'm going to be up and running soon. You want to come out and use my studio, you're more than welcome.
You guys heard it here, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely, man. No, I'm all about that. I'm all about that. One thing I found about podcasts, and this holds true for every good podcast, cross promotion is like everything. You come on someone's show, they come on your show, and you have, you're sharing crowds at that point. My brother does the same thing. He does it with Joe Rogan, Adam Carolla. He's like, he gets out, does their cast, they come and do his. And before you know it, you're doubling, tripling, quadrupling your audience. Yeah. So
you're doing networks within networks.
It's always cool. it's a win-win.
So really. Let's talk about
and
your
we're
podcast
having fun.
That you said you're developing a podcast right now.
It started out. Let's be brief with it. It started out as an answer to my brother being fired from Sirius XM satellite radio. Everyone wanted to know what was going on. They wanted the inside scoop. So I decided to buy myself a little HD. Webcam.
Yeah.
Hooked it up. I had no idea what I was doing. Hooked it up. Went up on Ustream. Said, sorry, Riotcast. I went up on Ustream. Boom, boom, boom. Put everything up. And in one day, I had 1,500 followers on
Whoa.
This thing. So it was like, everyone, obviously, I'm not deluding myself into, believing I'm all that. It's my brother, they wanted to find out what was going on with him being his career being in flux, so I let him know what was going on, basically, and that his cast would be up soon and running, and that I started doing a cleanup show on Thursday after Anthony finished. I would go on Thursday night and I would just reiterate some of the things that he went through, and I would kind of take off on some of the things that I thought he probably could have spoken about more. And that's how it started. Now it's, being a musician, I'm not my brother, never tried to be. Being a musician, I wanted to start something music-based. So the studio's downstairs, podcast room's downstairs. What's going to be really cool about the green screen is being able to stand there and play with the Who. I could play with anyone I want now. Pop me into Song Remains the Same. There's a second guitarist.
There's a second guitarist. What's Bono doing?
Bono's down in Joe's basement. I saw it.
You know what's funny? When you say green screen and you say, oh, I want to play with the Who, I immediately think, I want to be in Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's like, I say, fuck music. I want to be in Star Wars. I want to be in Batman. I want to be...
Rich, I can do that for you. I can do that.
Honey, can we go over Joe's house and be in Star Wars?
He's just as excited as my six-year-old daughter when I told her that I can have a fairy land on her hand.
Sounds about right.
She was enthused. Sounds so that's right. Anytime, Rich. Anytime. You guys are more than welcome.
This is the least geeky room of the house. We're shielding you from it right now.
We hid most
we
of our weapons.
We hid all the swords.
I feel like I belong, Rich. I feel like I belong. So.
If I come, would you be able to put me in Japanese karaoke videos?
Let's go. Let's go. Actually, my brother has the capability of that at his place. You guys have to make it out to the compound one time.
I would love to.
You're all invited.
I just want to stand invited. In front of a waterfall with a sparkly shirt.
That, dare I say, would go viral in days. Within a day or two.
You have to be playing kazoo, though.
Yes. Always more kazoo.
We have a thing on our show called More Kazoo, and he plays, he replaces famous sax solos with kazoo. Nice. And improves the songs in most cases.
I believe it.
Should we play some?
What?
Yeah, let's play some.
Oh, okay.
I haven't done that yet.
I was going to.
Why are you so offended by that?
Andy's always rushing me to play when I'm in the middle of a conversation. That's okay.
Well, I like conversing. I like conversing almost as much as playing.
Okay.
Do you want to get in just briefly? Get into why we're doing the song we're doing.
Yeah.
This first one.
Go
because
for it.
I am possibly the biggest Blue Oyster Cult fan that's ever set foot on the face of the planet. For real. From the time I was like 14, 15 years old.
Awesome.
I was a huge, huge Blue Oyster Cult fan. I owned their first couple of records, Secret Treaties, Tyranny of Mutation. I learned how to play by listening to Donald play.
Well, we have a surprise for you. Open the bathroom door, honey. Donald, come on out.
Nice.
I should call Eric right now and have him and just say hello to him.
Put him on the spot.
Yeah, let's put him on the spot.
Oh, he's never been put on the spot on the podcast before. Yeah, this is so exciting.
You know, this is the only way I'm going to get Eric on the podcast is to put him on the phone.
Totally keep on with the talk show music. That's
so
wonderful,
Andy. While you're contacting Eric.
Are you going to gush?
When I was about 14 years old, I had a little band, and Donald came out, gave us all picks. Mm-hmm. He came out to a show that we were doing, and it was awesome.
Nice.
It was a lot of fun. I was starstruck.
Here we go. We have to leave like at 4 in the morning tomorrow, but it's okay.
He's not going
to. Come on, Eric.
We're leaving at 6.
Oh, so there we go. We're both.
Oof.
Only we're driving to Indiana. Where are you flying to?
Mississippi?
Mississippi.
Mississippi.
He's not going to answer. Isn't it a different time zone among us?
Maybe Star Search is on or something.
My first contact with Eric was when Greg Smith left the band to go play with Alice Cooper, mm-hmm. and I was playing acoustic gigs with Greg and another guy, and Greg said, I heard you're a Blue Oyster Cult fan. I said, the biggest hugest blue. You play bass for Blue Oyster Cult. It's like he's like, yeah. You want to audition? Get there. So I boned up on all my on the bass lines because I knew a lot of the guitar parts. So boned up on the bass lines, went to Eric's house and sat down in the basement with him and Buck. I was in my glory. And they said they only had one more guy to hear. Who was that guy? Danny Miranda. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I had the gig.
Is that why Danny's not here?
Yes.
I had the gig.
That's why Danny's not here today.
Vince is very friendly with Danny also, and he said, where's Danny? And Danny, here's what happened.
Danny, the world needs ditch diggers too, Danny.
Oh, God.
I was like, hey, no, that was a Caddyshack reference. Different Danny. Completely different Danny.
Today you texted me, you said, and I said, let's confirm, you're singing one of these songs. You said, yes, singing and playing bass. And I go, oh shit. I called up Danny. Did you learn that song yet? He goes, no, I'm just sitting down to learn it. I said, stop what you're doing. I said, he's playing bass on it. And he said, oh, all right. I said, so do you want to play guitar in that? He's like, no. So I said, look, if, because he's going on the road tomorrow also. Wow. And we all have gigs tomorrow. It's
we're
crazy.
All busy. Yeah. That's awesome.
And I said, look, if you don't want to make the trip down, I'll play bass on that one song and guitar on the other one. He said, all right, I appreciate that. So Danny was almost here. But originally when you were going to come on the show, I called Danny. I said, hey, you want to come down? He goes, yeah. I said, now... he goes, you know, me and Joe both auditioned for Blue Oyster Cult. I said, is that going to be awkward?
No, you have an MMA ring out in the back, right?
You'd be surprised.
I think I could take him. It was a great experience. And, you know, later I ended up getting I actually called when Chasm had to leave the first time.
Right.
And he had no... and. From what I had heard, there was no replacement.
Right.
So I called Eric. This was probably almost 10 years after.
Yep.
I still had Eric's number. Hadn't used it in 10 years, but I called him. I'm like, Eric, well, this is Joe Cumia, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And he said, yeah, well, we have our tech. There was a tech at the time. Oh, who played bass? Right? And that was, so you're the guy.
Yeah, I'm the guy.
You're the guy.
In the back right now.
MMA. That's it. Hey, we go live now.
Andy can't fight for shit, so you got a good chance.
Hey, I got tattoos. Tomorrow. I'm dangerous.
Yeah, watch my hand.
So.
Brandy's going to fight you. It's gonna
But the funny thing is, he was so diplomatic about it. Eric says to me, he goes, listen, man. He goes, I got to tell you something. And he goes, I appreciate you calling, you know, and asking. He goes, but let me tell you a little story about a band called The Doors. Yeah. I guess you heard that story. He was, well, Robbie Krieger used to come up all the time, and he would play. He would do like Roadhouse Blues with him, come up to Blue Oyster Cult shows. And, you know, when they weren't doing much of anything. So years ago, there was a reunion tour. The Doors, you know, Densmore, Krieger, they all got together, and they needed a lead singer. So Eric thought he was the guy. So he really did. He thought he was the guy. This is a conversation that I had on the phone. He said, and what did they do? They hired Ian Astbury from The Cult. Like, you know, not only did they not give me the gig, but they hired a guy from a band called The Cult who, like, they had a little...
Maybe they were confused. Maybe they thought they were getting Eric.
They were getting Eric, and they got Ian Astbury, and they were like...
Cult something, yeah.
This
cult.
Guy is...
Yeah,
guys kind of kind of looks like Jim Morrison, but I was like, but you know, I'm on the other end of the phone and I'm like now it just puts everything into perspective, because you know he was just as disappointed as I was not getting the gig with Loris and Paul. You know, he loved The Doors.
Well, I have a similar story. I auditioned for something called the Queen Extravaganza, which was a online competition. And I submitted a video thinking, like, you know, this is who wins these things? You know what I mean? Thousands of people, you know, submit. So I put, they said, okay, send a video of you playing a Queen song. So I got this Queen guitar here, and I submitted a video. I think I was doing Killer Queen, and I got my pedal to do all the harmonies and stuff, and I just didn't think about it. And then, like, a few months later, or a few weeks later, I said, okay, please submit another video. I said, all right. So I submitted another one. And then I remember I was in the shower one day, and Anne-Marie knocks on the door. You're going to California!
Do you have a recollection of this?
I was like, what? I was like, you're going the day of our vacation. We had a vacation planned already. I was like, shit. She goes, you knew this was going to happen, you asshole! You just ruined our vacation. And that was actually the trip. That was the trip I was planning on proposing to her. This is while we were still, you know, just boyfriend and girlfriend. And so I was like, okay, don't worry. We'll take a couple days off of our Italy trip. You know what I mean? It wasn't even like, oh, we're
first time going to Italy.
You know,
wrong thing to say.
It wasn't even like, you know, we're going to Martha's Vineyard for the week. It's like, no, we're going to Italy.
Yeah, a couple of days off the top.
Yeah, so it was, what a shit show of a week. But I got to meet Roger Taylor.
Awesome.
And they, you know, I didn't get it. And the guys who they got were really good. So I didn't feel like, oh man, this sucks. Like, now the guys they got are really good. You know what I mean? It's like it has nothing to do with popularity, or it was a musical decision. You know what I mean? And that made me feel good about it. But I noticed that after that, when I would be like in my car driving and a Queen song would come on, I'd like shudder, like, fuck,
feels good.
So, yeah. And I got like, and I got really, you know, and I'm really, it's like, this is my favorite band. Like, I'm as big of a Queen fan as you are a Blue Oyster Cult fan. Mm-hmm. So my first question, before I finish my story, is, did you feel like after that happened, when a Blue Oyster Cult song would come on, were you like, fucking Blue Oyster Cult? Because I know I had that feeling towards Queen.
Nah, it never really. I mean, you know why? Because, I mean, I was like that caliber of Blue Oyster Cult fan when I was very young.
Right.
So, like, by the time a lot of the later stuff started coming, you know, like Burning For You, and the hits, yeah, you know, started coming around, I was kind of, I wasn't over him by any means. I'm still a fan, but it wasn't as intense as it was.
Well, you were older
back,
also.
Back then. Yeah, yeah.
That's 10 years difference from Burning For You to the first album.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Huge, huge difference.
That happened to me too when I got cast in Batman and then I got cut out of Batman.
That's a true story. Tell that story. You know what? We never told that story on this show. Please tell that story.
I when I was living in Chicago, I was doing a lot of extra work, and then I started getting they're like, here, say this, and then I would have stuff. And I always wound up on the cutting room floor. And then they started filming Dark Knight, the second Chris Nolan Batman movie. And they're like, okay, so it's going to be a scene. It's an intimate scene. It's going to be you, another guy. You guys are playing cards. Also you're dead. And and it's like, and it's a very intimate cast. It's only going to be probably three or four other cast members, and it's a night shoot. I'm like, okay. So they're like, you know. So they tell me the details. I go and I film. It's the scene in Dark Knight where he goes into the apartment, and there's two guys that are dead that were playing cards, and they're in Joker like makeup. Right. And then he cuts like the brick out of the wall and like takes the bullet and then takes it home. I was in that scene. And they filmed it. I got to see the bat suit up close. Like, I was in the room, same room as Batman.
Was it Christian Bale?
It was Christian Bale. Because he came in to do that. What? I had a incredibly long conversation with Gary Oldman about Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz at the craft service table.
Awesome.
And so I do this thing, and like, and I'm telling everybody about it for like months, and then like I'm so excited to go see the movie, and we go, and that scene comes up, and the camera goes in, and there's two guys at the table, neither of them are me, and I was like, what? Like, and I got so upset, and then I'm like, Richie and me are focused in the movie because it's Batman, but then I was like that was the scene. I'm not there.
You're a liar. That wasn't.
So I call the casting agent the next day, and she goes, oh, after they filmed everything, there was like 12 or 13 scenes that got screwed up, and they had to reshoot all of them after, like, 2 months after shooting wrap. So they came back, and she goes, we couldn't find you. I was like, you had my number.
So would you have gone on a plane to go back and do that?
100%.
Of course.
100%. If they would have called me. And so it was
in a Batman movie?
Oh, it was the same thing. It was the same thing. Because then after that, I was like, fucking Batman.
Batman's not so great.
And that's like, something you've liked since you were a kid.
I know. And the thing is, I said it to you before, like, of course, like, I would have loved to have been in that movie, like, even just for a split second. But then, like, I feel like it also would have taken me out of it because, like, we're engrossed. Like, we're in Gotham. And then it's like, I know that guy.
That was like seeing Jim Norton, one of my brother's partners on the show.
I love Jim.
He's a comic. And seeing Jim Norton in Spider-Man. The first Spider-Man.
He stinks and I don't like him.
He knows the line. I was like, this Jimmy. He's not a surly truck driver. He was listed as the surly truck driver. That's hysterical. You know who I got to hang with for a little while? And it was a trip. Buzz from the Home Alone movies. Devin Rattray.
Nice.
You know
your girlfriend. Woof.
You know I'm Devin Rattray? Okay.
Jared's hardcore. He knows he's a hardcore nerd.
Well, he kind of reminded me of Devin a little bit. I walked in and I was like, he looks a little like Devin Rattray. But we did some drinking on the Ron and Fez show together, me and Devin. And he was actually at the very first 2U gig, known as the Joshua Tree when I first started it years ago. He was at the very first gig played harmonica on Desire.
Nice.
But he did not. He was playing an A harp.
Oh no!
And we were in, and we were tuned down to E flat. We were like, you know, tuned to half step flat of concert pitch. Oof. So I was like, and he didn't know. He didn't care. We didn't care. It was Buzz from Home Alone playing harmonica on stage, a half step sharp.
I got to tell you, doing this podcast is awesome because I don't think I might not have had the chance to sit down with you guys and talk about this stuff. Because when you meet a musician you've never met before, you find so many common experiences. Right. And when you say something, it makes me think of something that happened the exact same fucking way. We were doing a gig, and this guy shows up with his guitar. I never met this guy, right? And he sits there in the corner at a regular bar gig, like we've all played. He sits there in the corner and he starts taking his guitar and he's shredding. It's not plugged in. He's sitting at the bar, an electric, like an Ibanez, and he's just fucking ripping, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I don't have like the biggest ego when it comes to that stuff. So I go up to him. I said, "Hey, you brought your guitar. Would you like to sit in with us?" He was like, "Oh man, really?" I'm thinking, why the fuck did you bring your guitar then? If you're not gonna sit, you know what I mean? Like I figured that was the point, that I'd see you had your guitar,
right?
And you're gonna come sit in with us, right? And like, so I'm thinking, like, is this a thing you do? Do you go out to bars and shred in the corner?
Who, me?
Yeah, like, so I guess it is. So he's like, oh yeah. I was like, all right. So I did that jerky thing that all musicians do. Okay, you'll come on to the third set. You know what I mean? So that's 8 o'clock. That means you gotta wait till like 1:45 before you're coming on the stage. And he was like, "Oh, great!" And he's sitting there and he's getting his chops ready for the gig. He's shredding in the corner. I'm like, man, this guy's gonna
sweating.
Yeah, I'm like, I better wait till the end because this guy might like kick my ass seriously because he looks fucking legit. So he comes up on stage, and I'm like, you know, hey, we got a special guest we're gonna bring up, and he comes up on the stage. And he plugs in a spare amp, and I go, "What do you want to play?" He's like, "Well, I don't really know songs," and I go, "Uh-oh."
So, oh boy!
And I go, "Oh,
just know how to shred."
Yeah, I said, "Okay, how about Crossroads? That's one that everybody knows." You know,
blues.
What I mean? Yeah,
yeah, nice simple blues. Yeah.
And he goes, "Okay, sure." I said, "It's a blues." He goes, "Well, you know, I don't really do keys."
Was this guy your cousin Phil?
No! And I said, then I'm thinking, like, I go into guitar teacher mode, right? And I go, "Do you know the pentatonic scale?" Right? And he goes, like, I'm like, "Yeah, that one." Because he's on stage already. I announced it. There's people in the bar. There's no turning back now. I said, "Okay, when I point to you, start doing that." So we go into the song, and he is hopelessly lost, right? He's playing the wrong chords. I'm thinking, what is happening right now? And everybody in the band is looking at me like, "What have you done? What kind of a jerk are you that you go up to a stranger who walks into a bar who's not one of your friends? You never heard him. We're on a gig here, and you have him come up on stage and you fucking embarrass us in front of everybody." And I'm looking at my band, and Andy has like the look of horror at me, like, "What have you done?" And so. We did probably the shortest version of Crossroads ever played at any gig. Because you know that song could take off. We did about a minute and a half of it. And I said, "Okay,
not
thank you.
Not if you don't know the pentatonic scale." Yeah,
he knew it, but he started playing it in the wrong key.
The wrong spot.
I went up to his hand, and I moved him on the right fret. Because he started playing, like, everybody knows.
Why is this on film?
And then he introduced himself as Artie No Key Arpeggio, right?
And I'm like, oh my God. And basically he just learned, and this is something I've noticed in a lot of younger students, it's this whole instant gratification thing. You learn just the parts you want of the songs you like, and yeah, you can't sit in with a band. So
I really do
feel is something that is like lacking these days. I've seen so many young players that, I mean, there are some, don't get me wrong, you know, that do their, you know, do their work. They do their their homework. They sit woodshed like we used to do. Just sit in woodshed.
Yep.
I mean, you sit in your room. I sat in my room with more records and just learned complete songs by ear the best way I could, you know? I mean, I sat down with the Yes songs and I just, like, you know, Learned
Ooh.
Yes. I learned a ton of yes.
Ooh.
I learned a ton of yes.
What yes songs do you know?
I know lots of them. I know a lot of them. We're, pretty much.
Me and Andy are pretty yes big songs. Yes nerds.
Really?
Yeah. He liked jazz first, but I fixed that. And now he likes yes instead.
Good job. Yeah, we could probably go through. We could probably go through. We could probably go through hours of yes.
Well, all right. How about this? Let's play Bucks Boogie first because it's a song we practiced, and then we'll go into the songs we don't know, like we do on so often on shows. So I'm gonna relocate.
Sounds like fun.
All right, and get the camera. Okay. We gotta turn it back on then. Before we start, we do a thing on Band Geek where we try to teach people songs.
No, that's fine.
And that's a clever way for us to rehearse before we play. So we try. We pass it off as education, but it's complete nonsense because we're practicing. So, Joe, can you take people through the main riff of the song?
Oh, sure.
Like if someone's a guitar player and they want to learn how to play this, can you explain it to them?
It's in the key of A, and it's fast. It was tricky. A lot of guys, when I was in high school, a lot of guys used to bar the. And it would never sound right. Each note's got to be played.
Right.
So it'd be the basic notes are A, D, E, G, A.
And that's from that pentatonic position we were just talking about.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And it's a and it's this fast.
And that's all on the 5th and 7th fret. You can do that lick.
That's correct. 5th and 7th fret. And you get the speed up.
Oh, you got that Buck Dharma swing going on right now.
You got like the craning neck.
You know what? I love his feel. You know, sometimes as a guitar player, when I'm improvising, I get a little lost and I notice like I'll hit a note that wasn't like on time and it like kills me. He never does that.
I know. He does sometimes, but he does it on purpose.
Yeah.
And that
when
right?
he plays with the rhythm, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
But I mean like when he just right. gets into it, he like every note is just in the pocket when he plays. And
yeah.
And the only other guy I know who's like that who can play like blues rock like that is Eddie Van Halen. Like when he's just going off, every note is just in the pocket.
Where
and
balls.
And that's how I feel about when Buck plays. And I'm like, man, I wish I could just do that. Like sometimes I'll get lost in something and I notice like I'll start losing accuracy a little bit. And that never happens with him.
That's like weird. I know weird little like passages that like. Okay. Right from what was that from like Seven Screaming Dizbusters or something.
That was my favorite BOC song to play.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I'm sad we stopped doing it, but because it was
you guys
a little
stopped doing it.
Well, it was a little out there when you're playing like a casino.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean? Like, or a festival, and people look at you like, "What is it, Dizbuster?"
I got to be honest, man. The first time I saw you play, I think was at the casino. Actually, I saw you at State Theater.
Okay,
down in Falls Church, coincidentally, a venue that we do. Yeah. And I actually drove down there because I hadn't seen the band in so long. So I went down to see you guys play, and and the solo in. The solo parts that you take in Last Days of May, I was like, man, I love that song to solo over. Mm-hmm. It's such a killer because yeah, I mean you can go from here to here,
right?
It's like you know cover everywhere in between. So emotionally, it's a great song.
Absolutely,
you know? Really good song. And I said, God. Damn, I wish I was soloing while you were soloing. I'm like, I wish that was me doing that. And then I saw you do your Bohemian Rhapsody thing, and I was like, okay, yeah, all right, no, you don't want to be soloing. He belongs there. He deserves that job. You are. I'm gonna gush once because I do that one time. Love you and hate you, Rich, because you are absolutely one of the most talented musicians I've ever spent any time with. So
I really appreciate that. It's
all good, man.
Super nice.
Good.
But you know, it's you mentioned that, and it's funny because going back to what we were just talking about with the when you hate your favorite band. That's why I did that video, because I said I don't want to not like Queen anymore, because I had a experience that had nothing to do with them. You know what I mean? It just had something to do with me or the right person for a gig. You know what I mean? So I did that just to make myself appreciate the music again, and it worked. Like, now I'm back to my Queen fan level that I was at before, you know, that whole thing happened. But the best piece of advice someone gave me is my best friend Damien. I was kind of down in the dumps when it happened, and he goes, "You can't be in your favorite band. You're not allowed to be in your favorite band." You
That's right,
dummy. He was like, I was like, "Yeah, but I don't." He goes, "You're not allowed to be."
And you know why? And you know why? Because Danny Miranda's always in your favorite band.
That's right.
That's right. Why.
Oh my God!
Danny Miranda's always in your favorite band. Thank you. Check, please.
You know what?
That's right, going to be the end of the podcast.
No, that's going to be the Band Geek T-shirt. Brandy's right. It's going to say you can't be in your favorite band because Danny Miranda's already in your favorite band. That's it. That is the quote. Oh my God.
Well, we gotta get him a shirt that says, "I'm in your favorite band."
Yeah. So, okay, I'm sorry. I'm going off on that side tangent there. But, okay, so we have the that whole thing. Then we have a little, which is like a blues scale going down. But you skip the fifth and go to the flat fifth.
Flat fifth, yeah.
And then you do the regular blues scale. Okay, now this next part is probably one of my favorite things that Buck ever wrote.
Yeah.
This, that reminds me of like Debussy.
Yeah.
What, Andy, what chords are those? So,
is that right?
No, don't play what I play. That's wrong when I play. I'm asking you what the right chords
are. Oh, I don't know. I thought it was a.
Yeah.
And then a C sharp minor.
Oh, yeah.
And then a C.
Yeah, that's not what I play. I play A major seventh. Which is the same thing.
It's the
actually.
Same thing, yeah.
Vince, do you know music theory?
Yes.
Oh, so because Vince is like giving us looks like he's in the know. So I gotta. That's a rare thing. A drummer who knows what the rest of the guys are talking about.
I actually started as a piano player.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And don't let him fool you. He's.
I regressed to drums.
He's an unbelievable drummer, but as a he's also he produces. I mean, he plays bass, he plays guitar, he produces. He's one of those savant guys that I hate too. That I love hate. I love hate this guy. So I sit down at a drum kit and it sounds like bam bam, you know. You know, but he can do. He can pretty much do it all, just like you, Rich.
Well. Don't look at me like that. I'm about to go in the MMA ring with
I'm
you.
I'm just glad. I'm glad Danny Miranda only plays bass. That's there you go. Okay, he's only a bass player.
There's one tricky part we should probably rehearse before we do the song. There's a section in the song,
that drum solo.
Right, that goes to B minor. That comes in, yeah. So we have so I should probably be counting, right? Okay,
I can count.
All right, so one. No, when I give you the cue, when I give you the head nod, it's like one. Bam, bam, bam.
And then where's the down?
Two. It's one, two, three. Bop, bop, bam.
Oh, another three? Oh, I'm
one,
sorry.
One, two, three. Bop, bop, bop.
So let's do the whole section again from the. One, two, three, four. That's it.
Yeah.
All right.
Not
really. I'll give you the look.
It's on the one end. It's one bop bop bop.
Yeah, after the one, that's what I thought. So, all right, one, two, three, four.
Yeah.
now you do the solo. So it's like bah, 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 two, three, bah, bah, two, three, now bounce.
Count that one spot again.
Yeah. One, two, three, four, one, bah, 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 two, three, four, and two, three, four, one. Yeah. That's it.
I'll be sure to screw that part up.
No, don't worry about it. We're having fun here. Okay, here goes nothing. Unrehearsed Bucks Boogie.
Here it comes.
We'll be right back. Holy shit. Whoa. Here's Vince going, oh, I don't know if I got it. And he just like nailed it to the wall. And Joe ripping it up. Awesome.
Oh, thank you, man.
Holy crap.
Can we call
you just
Eric
made
back
a
now?
Childhood dream come true with a 55-year-old.
Awesome.
Thank you very much, sir.
Oh, man. That was cooking.
That was smoking. Smoking.
Can we call Eric back now?
No, he's...
I think that was Eric that was calling before, wasn't it?
No, I think the voice is still on or something. I don't know.
Awesome.
All right, let's move back to where we were before. Hold on.
Okay, that was pretty awesome. I got.
Hey, if you want to do that, I'll do it.
I'd love to.
That, you know.
Oh, we can stop this now, right?
Yes. You know what's funny? I showed Buck the video of us doing Burn a Few with John Michelli. He goes, wow, you play that beginning lead right. He goes, I don't know what that is anymore. He goes, I play the Buck version of that.
It's funny as hell. There was a band that was an offshoot of Blue Oyster Cult. It was the Bouchard brothers.
Yeah.
It was actually Albert and Joe, and they had a band called the Cult Brothers. And they came to play at a bar that me and my brother had a band years and years ago called Rotgut. And it was a punk funk. That's where I learned how to play bass. I basically like became enamored of Flea's style of playing, which was him being enamored of Bootsy Collins,
yep.
You know, all the old funk players. But anyway, we were playing this place in Commack, New York. It was called T-Rocks. And the Cult Brothers played. They came up in a big bus, and it was Albert and Joe. And I don't even want to get into what was going on that bus, but I was invited, you know, to come because I told them that I knew a lot of Blue Oyster Cult songs, and they had a little amp and a guitar on the bus, and I started blowing out like all kinds of, you know, Blue Oyster Cult lead parts, and they had some guitar player that was like, hey, it was all right, he wasn't Buck, that's for damn sure, you know, and they asked me they jokingly, I guess, asked, you know, hey man, what are you doing for the next couple of weeks? You want to come out on the road? Yeah. And I flat turned them down. I was like, no. You guys aren't. I mean, founding members, yes, Hall of Famers and all that good stuff. But no, the real deal is the real deal, and that's the two guys, man, Donald and Eric.
It's hard to play
and
like,
Alan, rest in peace.
Right, right. Well, that when I joined, that was I replaced Danny on bass. Originally, and
good.
Yeah, he was too busy playing with Queen. So I replaced him, and then 2 years later, when Alan retired, they said rather than go through the process of getting a new keyboard guy and someone who can double, why don't you move over to that?
We have someone right here in the organization that could be moved over to.
That's my favorite movie.
Of course.
So they asked me, like, we know you play guitar, you play keyboard, right? I'm like, of course I play keyboard. I couldn't play keyboard. but I wanted to be able to play guitar. So for like the next 2 weeks, I woodshedded keyboard. Like, I played keyboard like every guitar player plays keyboard.
Right.
I could do with the three, I could do triads.
Chicken
feet,
like,
dun, yeah,
dun,
chicken.
Dun, that's why I play keyboard.
Dun, 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 yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
I know how to do that stuff, but I really, you know, approached it like, okay, you know, we can do certain things on guitar because we've been playing a long time. We have our fingers like certain familiar patterns. But when you want to learn something tricky and fast, you got to get the metronome out and you got to break it down like it's a purely physical thing. Right. Your feel and your musicality, I hate to say, goes out the window because this is a feat of dexterity at that point because you can't think that fast playing live. And that's how I treated playing the keyboards. I said, okay, this is a muscle memory thing that I can get if I just do it slowly. And for like 2 weeks, that's all I did. And I really, I mean, I was playing with Alan and I had tremendous respect for him as a bandmate and as a person. But then when I had to go back and learn his parts, I was like, damn, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea he was this good. Because, you know, you're on a loud stage. You're focusing on what you're doing. You know, you hear the cool keyboard part, but you don't think of anything of it because you're so, a lot of the times, even though you're listening to the band, you're very involved with getting your part right. And when I actually went to go learn the parts, I gained tremendous respect for him. And there were a lot of difficult parts. For me, the hardest thing at first was
flaming telepaths.
I still fucked that up when I play that. Well, no, you know why? Because there's two versions. I think on the record, it's like it does that like funky note, and then on the live version, they would go. So there's two different versions, but on one version that I heard, he does like that funky blues note.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which one's the live one or not, and so I'm sort of trying to figure out what version do they want me to play. But there's a song, if you're a hardcore BOC song, you'll know there's a song called Arthur Comics. Mm-hmm. And we played that for we did a fan only show in Hoboken a few years ago where we did like 40 songs from the back catalog, like 40 obscure tunes.
Wow.
And I had to learn Alan's organ solo for that, which is tough. You know, and it was a big pain in my ass. Fast forward to when we did the 40th anniversary show and Alan was there. I went up to him and I said, Alan, I got to tell you, I had no idea you were this good on keyboards. He's like, what do you mean? And I said, I could barely play some of this stuff. He goes, oh, you get out of here. You're a wizard. I said, no, man. I said, Donald made me learn Arthur Comics note for note. And then he went up to Donald and goes, Don, why are you bothering Richie? He's like, why are you making him do that? I said, yeah. Why are you making him do that? And he goes, he's like, that's just something I came up with on the spot. Now you're making him learn it? And Don's like, it's got to be right. He goes, what you played awesome. Is the quintessential part in that.
Wow.
So you know some pretty obscure Blue Oyster Cult songs. Like what other ones do you like? Have you always wanted to play? Or
oh man, I mean we probably did like 15 or 20 like early, you know. They're not that obscure. I mean, Stairway to the Stars. Career of Evil, Dominance and Submission, ME-262.
Did you see the video of us doing that with Patti Smith?
Which
Career of Evil?
No, I didn't.
When we were rehearsing for the 40th anniversary show, she came down because she was originally going to sing with us live, but the date got moved because of the storm. Mm-hmm. And our manager took his cell phone out and videotaped it, and it's up. I think it's on YouTube now. It's us doing it with Alan. Alan and Patti Smith.
Wow.
It's pretty awesome, and it sounds great. So that's something definitely to check out.
Patti Smith has had a pretty close relationship with Blue Oyster Cult over the years, right?
Yeah, she wrote the lyrics of Shooting Shark, I believe, and Career of Evil, and maybe a few other ones.
There's another one. Didn't she like? What was it? Didn't she go out with one of the?
Yeah, Alan.
With Alan. Yeah. Okay. I knew she. Yeah, she went out with one of the guys in the band, Alan Lanier, and they wrote. I forget what the song was, man. I think it was off of Agents of Fortune. It was like one of the lesser known tracks off Agents of Fortune. Vera Gemini.
Oh right, the Revenge of Vera.
Revenge of Vera Gemini, yeah. Wasn't that? That was a song that I believe Patti Smith has writing credits on.
I'm not sure.
She has a couple. Yeah.
I'd like you to tell that story about you said when you put a letter in someone's mailbox.
Oh yeah, no, that was back when I was again I was a kid. I was in high school. I think it was like maybe a sophomore in high school, and I heard through the grapevine that one of the guys from Blue Oyster Cult lived on Clay Pitts Road in Greenlawn. I was raised in East Northport, right up the road, like next town over. I actually lived on Clay Pitts Road a little bit further up. So, I figured out which house it was. And rather than be a creep and knock on the door, I was always not embarrassed, just very conscious of not wanting to be that guy. I had like... I'll tell you once I get going with this story. But anyway, I took a piece of paper. I scrawled on
with your own blood.
Yeah, my own. It was my blood. I chopped my ear off. I wrapped it, and I wrote on the paper. I said, "Dear Mr. Bouchard," I thought it was one of the Bouchard brothers that lived there. Would you please come and see my band? We were playing at a Catholic YDA Youth Development Association in the back of a school. They used to let us set up the band and play, and all the kids were coming. You know, we'd play shows, and sure as hell, man, Buck shows up. And he had picks for everybody, you know, with the Blue Oyster Cult insignia on it. And I was just, I was blown away. You know, I was like, oh my God, it's him, it's him. And of course, like, getting around to the creepy kids, they were like these kids running around with bongs with dirt weed in it, like like shoving it in Buck's face, like, here, man, here. You know, he was like, he's got his kids, he's got, you know, his wife there. I was like, yeah, you know, I was embarrassed for, you know, for the rest of them, but... I, you know, he asked who Joe was. I said, it's me, you know, which brings me to the Stoned Age. Don't even go there. You ever see that movie?
I haven't, but I know they did it.
Well, the kid Joe in the Stoned Age.
Yeah.
Me.
That's you?
No.
It's supposed to be you.
But I thought it was. I thought it was me. It was, it's just creepy weird. I actually got hit in the eyes with the laser during Don't Fear the Reaper, and it changed my life forever. But anyway, getting back to the YDA. So Buck was having these, like, you know, old warm beers and bongs shoved in his face, and I got immediately protective. I was like, get away from him! Get away from him! And I approached him. You know, is Joe here? Yeah, that's me. Mr. Dharma, pleasure to meet you. Like, Roser. Yes, Donald Roser. I totally forgot. I was totally freaked out. And I was, you know, I mean, I was like, I was 6 foot at the time. And I was, you know, I was a tall kid. And, you know, Donald's, he came up to like my shoulder. And I said to him, I said, you, I look up to you, man. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. As a guitarist, no, really, as a guitarist, I learned every lick.
You made it way worse than it had to be, didn't you?
Oh. And shortly thereafter, he was back in the
shortly
car.
Shortly thereafter? Oh, Jesus.
Oh, I didn't mean that. I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Shortly thereafter.
Stop it. Diminutively thereafter. I was just... The best part. I should just stop while I'm ahead.
No, keep going.
And you thought it was Danny's fault that you didn't get into the war? Come on now.
Oh, Donald, I'm sorry.
There's the guy just, that said he was nuts
the way
over
it
me.
Happened. So he's not as ADD as I thought he was.
Because he's the height is nuts.
Nuts over him.
Oh, man.
Nuts
over him.
Oh, I've been waiting all
day
to say that.
He remembered for that many years. He was like, that's that son of a bitch. That's, yeah, okay. I remember him at the YDA.
I'll show you.
Yeah, exactly. I'll show you. This close, sorry.
From down here,
close,
though.
But no cigar.
I had a similar moment. I mean, if you think, well, this is an interesting thing to go around the room with. If you could meet, if there's one, now we know it's Buck Dharma for you, but if there's one rock star or celebrity that you would meet that you would get completely stupid in front of, who would it be? Andy, you start.
I don't know.
Nope. Okay, that's exactly what I expected from you.
Yeah.
Okay, Muff, what do you think?
I've met a lot of people that I've been...
Oh, excuse me.
Listen, somebody was name-dropping the Dee Snider benefit concert earlier.
It's true. Douche points
D
to me.
He is tall. Yeah. Oh, I just thought I'd throw that out there. He's a big guy.
My friend Joe Cumia met Dee Snider also.
he's been around.
But I've never met Dan Castellaneta.
Oh, Homer.
Yeah, and I think I would like...
Do the voice!
Yeah.
Would you do that?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, please do my outgoing voicemail message.
So, what about you, Vince?
I've met a bunch of people as well, but the person that would probably make me, you know, be all soupy is dead, which would be John Bonham.
John Bonham. Ah. Anne-Marie?
I don't know. I feel like I'd act like an idiot in front of anybody I kind of idolize.
So all of the above.
All of the above. I mean, I clearly Freddie, Paul McCartney. I'd probably be like, blah, blah, blah.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. What about
he
you,
just
Brandy?
Seems so fun.
Can I answer
how about
for Richard?
Jared Leto?
So let's not talk about him. he was in Brooklyn. I really, really
wanted to meet Gigi Allen. But, oh, you've never heard of Gigi Allen?
No.
Oh, Google him. Just Google him.
Let's not go there.
Who knows G.G. Allin? G.G. Allin, the murder junkies? No, you don't remember
that? No,
no. Oh, boy. I wouldn't have expected you to know who that was.
I don't think we
he's just really, really what? Nasty. But actually, I know someone who met Paul McCartney, for real, in a driveway out in the Hamptons. Yeah. Jeff. Paul's guitar player.
Oh, Jeff Alagiu.
Jeff Alagiu.
Oh yeah, Jeff.
You know Jeff Alagiu?
Yeah, sure.
He met and Paul McCartney is his everything. I mean, yeah. To Jeff is like, and he said one day he was out at Al Di Meola's, actually out in the Hamptons.
Just chilling at Al Di Meola's.
He was chilling with Al. Al was working on some new stuff, and Jeff was there just hanging with him. And Al Di Meola goes, you know who's next door? Paul McCartney. So Jeff Alagiu was like, what? Who? What? And sure as hell, like the next day, he was hanging out in front. I think he was waiting there for like 8.5 hours. But he just happened to be hanging out in front with Paul McCartney.
What a coincidence.
Oh, hello, Paul. So all of a sudden, he's like, you know, Paul McCartney comes pulling up in this pickup truck and he waves to him. I'm sure he's sending up smoke signals, you know, like waves to him. Hey, Paul. And they had a nice conversation. But he said the entire time that he was talking to Sir Paul McCartney, he was just in his head, all kept going through his head is, holy shit, it's Paul McCartney. So he doesn't remember any of the conversation. He's like, I didn't remember anything. I was, and you know Jeff. I mean, it's just the way, yeah. You know, the way he comes through. He's like, I couldn't remember a thing. I'm just looking at him going, oh my God, it's Paul McCartney. Can I hug you? I want to hug you. Just hug you. That was his meeting Paul McCartney story.
My parents met Paul McCartney at a basketball game.
Oh, no kidding.
Like a couple months ago.
Yeah,
right?
Like recently. And my mom like was looking for a bathroom, and she's like lost at Barclays, and an elevated door opens, and Paul McCartney comes out. She goes, Paul McCartney! Wait right there! And she ran to get my
That's
dad,
awesome.
Right? And my and he, I mean, like he's gonna fucking wait there, you know what I mean? And my dad found him, and my dad actually had a cool thing to say, which I would not have had. I've actually spoken to Paul McCartney before, we'll get that in a bit. But my dad actually had a cool thing to say. He goes, Paul, I've been waiting my whole life to meet you. Very pleasure. And that's like a classy thing to say to somebody. Not like, you know, like completely dumbfounded. Like
I'm having a Ed Norton.
I spoke to Paul. I had one sentence exchange with him on the Oprah Winfrey show.
You heckled him.
I heckled him pretty much. We were. It's not heckling. You're dick, Andy. It's I guess I did. We'll let the audience decide what you were doing. We went on a
it's
school.
It's not heckling when you're a kid.
Yeah, I was a kid. We went on a school trip to the Oprah show because we knew Paul McCartney was going to be there. So our whole in high school, I was part of a guitar ensemble. So all the kids in the guitar ensemble went down to the Oprah show. There's about 12 of us, and we sat in the audience. And it was a commercial break, and we had a big symphony concert coming up in my high school where we were doing the Abbey Road medley. You know, the Golden Slumbers thing. Mm-hmm. And
at Lincoln Center.
At Lincoln Center, right?
Wow.
So on a commercial break, me and I think another girl stood up and said, Paul! And he turns around and he goes, yeah?
Yep.
I was like, oh, he says it like Paul. And then
answers to Paul.
Yeah, he does. Will you play with us? Will you play at our symphony concert at Lincoln Center? And he goes, sure. And I was like, ah! And there was a Daily News reporter there in the audience.
Like sitting right in front of us and turns around right, like, what school are you?
What school are you with? What's your name?
When's your concert?
Wow. And then the next day, like the news trucks were at our high school. And it was going to happen. Unfortunately and sadly, that was the year Paul's wife passed away. So it didn't happen. But it was a really crazy thing because it was... Wow. The whole news frenzy happened the day of my sister's wedding.
Oh,
so I'm in a tuxedo getting ready to go to my sister's wedding at Russo's on the Bay in Long Island, in Queens. And And my school call, I, you know, didn't go to school that day to get ready for the wedding. And my teacher calls me, Richie, you got to get down here. I'm like, it's the day of my sister's wedding. Channel 7 is here. They want to talk to you. So I had to take the tuxedo off, put my jeans on, and go to school. And my sister's flipping out because I'm at a bridal party. You know, it was a wild day.
It was like every news station was there the next day and every paper. It was crazy. Wow.
But I do have a story that I met someone who I was completely incomprehensible in front of and an idiot. Glenn Tilbrook from Squeeze, who is like one of my idols. And you know what? I didn't even realize I liked him that much until I met him and didn't know what, and was totally uncool in front of him. What happened is we were doing a gig in England. You know what? Actually, since this is the podcast, I could tell the whole story, which is kind of gross. But we were, this is a, screw it. We were playing in England at a big festival, and I saw on the day sheet, Glenn Tilbrook is opening. I was like, gotta see that. So we get to England, and the first thing I do when I get to England is I have a steak and ale pie at a pub because I love that. But I forgot that makes me shit violently. So
it's generally something you want to remember.
Yes. So
that's the sound.
You know, the only time I'd been to England before then was with Anne Marie on a vacation, and I remember I shit violently, but I didn't remember. I just remembered, ooh, steak and ale pie, that's good. So we're staying across the street from the Gilfest festival or whatever it is, and I'm getting ready to go out. I got all my band gear. I'm going to go early, walk over. It's in walking distance because I'm going to go see the whole Glenn Tilbrook set. And then all of a sudden, I feel the... And I'm like, no, not now! So I remember being stuck in the bathroom, and I can hear the gig going on, right? You know, tempted by the fruit. You know, the whole time, I'm going, no! Right? So finally, I get it.
Luckily, that song's about pooping anyway.
Yeah. So I get it out of my system, and I grab my bag and I run over to the gig. I'm in like rock star clothes, running through the streets of this festival. I show my pass to people. So I get to like the last tune where they were doing. They did that song.
Funky Town?
Yeah, Funky Town. They did a cover of Funky Town, right? Or something like that.
Funky Town.
Right? And,
that's awesome. That's
and great. I run over, I catch the last one. I'm like, I missed the whole thing. And I'm sitting there and I'm all like beside myself. And my tech comes out to me and goes, what's the matter? I was like, I just fucking missed Glenn Tilbrook. And he's like my favorite. He goes, oh, hold on a second. And 5 seconds later, Glenn Tilbrook standing in front of me, and he goes, and my tech, this guy Jack Secret, he goes, hey, Glenn, this is Richie, bass player for Blue Oyster Cult. He likes you. And I'm standing in front of Glenn, and he goes, oh, thanks, nice to meet you. I'm like, oh, Glenn, hey, I'm your favorite songwriter. I was looking at him like, I don't know what to say. Like, I talk too much most of the time, but I'm like, yeah, oh, you know, the way you, oh. And he goes, well, it was, I'm going to, and he's like drenched because he just got off stage. He's like, well, I'm going to go clean up. Nice meeting you. And he walks away and I'm like, fuck, I was just an idiot in front of my hero.
Del Paxton, you are my favorite fan. You are my biggest fan. Del Paxton.
But then you got better.
I prefer Captain Geach and the Shrimp Shack Shooter.
Adam Schlesinger.
Oh yeah, I met Adam Schlesinger, and I suppressed the urge to be a dick. But my friend John Biscuti was with me when I met Adam Schlesinger, and we played a show with Adam Schlesinger is the bass player from Fountains of Wayne. But he also wrote That Thing You Do. He wrote the music from Josie and the Pussycats. He wrote any Hollywood movie with a pop song in it. He wrote it. So we're in the van going to the gig with Adam Schlesinger. And I'm like, I wasn't cool. I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, hey, Adam, I'm a big...
You were able to talk to him.
Yeah, but everything I said was completely dorky. It's like, you know, hey, you know, I like your work, man. You know that Hugh Grant movie? Music and lyrics?
Well, it's wonderful.
I love that movie. hey, you know that Josie and the Pussycats movie? I was like Chris Farley. You know?
You remember when you wrote that song for that movie?
Was that real?
That was awesome.
And my friend John is sitting next to me like, what are you doing, man? But he said,
hey, man, I'm a big fan. And he's like, really?
Yeah. I think that's how it started. But then that was about as cool as it got. And then I just sunk into this restraining order territory. But I was looking up some stuff about you, Joe, and I saw your YouTube channel. You have a lot of videos on there. And you have a lot of acoustic videos that you did. Like, do you do a duo with your brother or something?
I actually, I used to. I used to do it when Anthony was not as busy as he is now. But every once in a while, we'll still get together and do acoustic stuff.
Now, you know a lot of the same songs I know. So we got to try to, we have to play something at the top of our heads. Actually, you know what? Since you're in the Journey band, I'd like to have Anne-Marie sing something.
Sure.
Can we do it? You know any Journey songs? How about you, Vince?
Any Journey songs?
Anne-Marie, what Journey song would you like to sing? Let's do it like that. Don't say Don't Stop Believing.
No,
that's
never.
On the band list.
Never.
Yes. Sing that again. How about Lights or Any Way You Want It?
Either of those are cool.
Sherry. That's just Steve Perry, though. Does that count?
Amory, check your mic.
Yo.
We can do that. All right. Well, if we're going to do it, we're going to turn the camera on, though. Is that good, Amory?
Yeah.
All right. So let's turn the camera. Is this rolling?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, the lights went on in the basement.
When the lights go on in the basement. All right, so we're going to do Lights by... now, let's go over the harmonies really quick. So you're going to go, when the lights
go down in the city.
Now, do you sing on this, Joe, when you play it? Yeah. Which part do you sing? Putting
when
you on a spot.
The lights go down in the city.
You'll be going...
Yeah.
And the sun shines on...
If you can go an octave above what you're singing.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so that's...
Lights go down.
That's
all right,
it.
Let's try it. Three.
One. When the lights go down in the city, and the sun shines on the bay, who I wanna be there in my city. Oh. Oh.
All right, so what are you singing there? Well, the woes.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
So I'll jump down for that, and then you're singing the whoa, whoa, something in the roots. All right, let's try it again. Yeah. Three from the whoa.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, I got it. All right, is that okay there? The side stick all the way in the side.
I'm not gonna be playing.
Okay, all right. Are we rolling both cameras?
Yes, we are.
Take it away, Joe.
Oh, I wanna be there in my city.
That was awesome. Really nice. Okay. So, you guys, the Journey band and the U2 band, that's the same guys?
Same four guys. Yeah, we trick a lot of people. We open for ourselves.
Get out of here.
Sometimes, yeah, yeah, we do. We'll
come out. All right, we're going to stop it right there and hear the rest of that story next week on Band Geek Episode 23. Thanks for listening. Band Geek Podcast.